This is the Dealer News Today podcast, the podcast for automotive executives and the professionals who support them.
Well, hey there, folks, and welcome to Dealer News Today, your number one automotive and dealer-related podcast. I appreciate you being here. You know, we're well into season six, folks, and this is episode five. We are just breezing on through. But, you know, if you want to listen to past episodes and seasons, that's super easy. You just head over to dealernewstoday.com or anywhere you get your podcasts, because we are all over the place. That's right. You can find us anywhere. And speaking of us, I'm your host, Derek D. And if you happen to be in Europe or live in Europe, look out for the latest Volkswagen campaign coming out very soon, because I'm in those commercials. Yeah, we shot them in Spain about a month ago. It was a great time. So if you're like, wait, who is Derek D? Well, DerekD.com is where you can go to find that out. All right, let's jump into this episode. We got a great guest, of course. You know, he's one of those rare finds where a person has been with one company their whole professional career, which is pretty cool. You know, that's dedication. He's got multiple degrees. We'll talk about that. And he happens to be a second degree black belt in Taekwondo. Yeah, so I'll ask him about that as well, because to me, that's just cool. And I'm talking about the president and head of auto lending at PNC. He is Jeff Turley. Jeff, what's going on, man?
Not much today, Derek. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I'm hanging in, literally, because I'm actually fresh off of some surgery. So I'm basically just sitting at home resting, but I could still do this. So feeling pretty good otherwise.
Well, good. I hope your recovery goes well.
Thanks. I do appreciate it. So Jeff Turley, president, head of auto lending at PNC. But let's talk about you for a second. Where are you originally from?
So I'm born and raised in Pittsburgh. Been here all of my life, with the exception of about 5 years I spent in Scranton, Pennsylvania, out a little bit closer to where you grew up.
Oh, okay. So you you worked for Dunder Mifflin for a little while?
Yeah, I did. Or? Yes. Yes. I ordered all the paper.
There you go. So born and raised in Pittsburgh, and you're still based in Pittsburgh, correct?
Correct.
And you're a huge Pittsburgh Steelers fan.
That's also correct.
Okay, just making sure. Yeah, I mean, I'm a Giants fan, but I appreciate the old school, you know, type teams, like, you know, Pittsburgh Giants, the Bears, Packers, just like, so I'm a Pittsburgh fan. And your quarterback is right from here in Ocean Township, New Jersey.
That's right. I forgot about that, but yes, Kenny Pickett is from your area.
Yeah, right here. I had friends that taught him and coached him in high school. So yeah, pretty cool. Anyway, I could talk football all day, but we're not here to talk about that. So you have a Bachelor of Arts degree in finance and economics from University of Pitt, right?
Yes.
And you have an MBA degree in finance and real estate from DeQuest. How do you say that?
Duquesne University. Duquesne.
Oh, Duquesne. Yep. Duquesne. Yeah, that's French, right?
Yes.
Okay, I was way off, but duh, Duquesne. So a very educated guy, and you've been in the business and with your company for what, like 35 years or so?
So I've been at PNC 35, 2 weeks right out of college, and then I've been in auto. So I started in auto in the late 90s, just on the commercial floor plan side of the business.
Okay.
And then as that kind of evolved, I ended up sliding a bit more into indirect auto. And so I have indirect auto, direct auto, and floor plan. But so I've been in the business since the late 90s on the commercial side, and then since the early 2000s, both sides of the business, both the dealer indirect side and the dealer floor plan side.
Wow. So heavily into the automotive side of things for a very long time.
Yes.
Yeah. And you are a car guy, I assist everybody.
I am absolutely a car guy. My dad loved cars. I learned to drive on a 65 Mustang, and
oh, nice.
I loved cars ever since.
Yeah, that's great. It's always interesting, because obviously you're a guy in finance and things like that. And sometimes I have people on the show who, you know, obviously work in the industry, but they're like, you know what, I'm not much of a car guy. I enjoy them and things like that. And I'm a car guy myself. So it's always just interesting to see who is, who's not. Not that if you're not, it's a bad thing, but it's always funny. It's always cool to see, like, oh yeah, you're a car guy. You get it, which I think probably helps in what you do. Right, since you have you love cars, so you have more of an interest in what you're doing on the automotive end, I would think.
Yeah, no, I think so. We you know, we have a lot of underwriters on the commercial side and floor plan relationship managers, and some of us love cars, and some just look at them as, you know, inventory, right? And so
right,
you don't
exactly
have to love cars, but it's certainly it's more fun. It's, you know, you kind of ask more questions of the dealers and they share more with you. And so it doesn't hurt to love them.
Yeah. Cause you know more about them too, I would think, you know what I mean? Like, you know, you just have a better general knowledge.
Yeah, right. You stop on the TV channel more when there's something about cars and you're always kind of, you know, wanting to know more about EV range or horsepower or whatever. What were, you know, like when the F-150 Lightning came out, they had to make it lighter. With all of the battery weight, they had to figure out ways to slow that vehicle down with different brakes. And so like that maybe wouldn't be of as much interest if you didn't really, you know, have a love of wanting to know about cars.
Right, for sure. And what was your first car? Was it that Mustang?
My first car was a Camaro.
Oh, wow. Manual, of course.
It wasn't. It was a used car when I was in high school. And then I ordered a new car the day I got the offer from the bank.
So you've been with PNC this whole time?
I have.
Wow, that's pretty cool. I always think there's something to be said for when people, you know, the longevity that you have. You've been with one company the whole time, so you definitely are dedicated. And obviously you love what you do, which is good. And speaking of what you do, you know, I always ask, this is, you know, one of the first questions I ask a lot of guests, because, you know, we see people's titles and we read them, but it's good to know what their actual day is like. So you're the president and head of auto lending at PNC. What does that entail? And what does a day in the life look like for you? Like, today's a Wednesday. What's it look like?
Yeah, well, so because I've got the three businesses, we've got the direct auto side, which is really originations through our entire branch network where people are in this. And that's so they're applying through PNC.com on a mobile device or a desktop. And so we've got that whole side of the business where we've got underwriters looking at direct auto applications.
When you say direct auto, that means
direct to consumer. And most of those transactions are coming in. People are leasing a car right now and they're in month 35 and they'd like to buy it, or they want to buy a car from a neighbor. They might know exactly what car they want to buy at a dealership. So that's a very specific sort of, I already know what I want. And then some people want to apply for an amount and then go shopping. And then the next piece of the business, which is the biggest piece of our the biggest piece of our two consumer business, is the indirect auto space. So we've got 6,000 dealers sending us applications every single day. We try to decision those as quickly as we can. And those are in about like 80% of them are a 30 or 40 second decision. And then the judgmental ones might take, you know, 7, 8 to 15 minutes. And that's the lion's share of the auto loans we're doing to consumers. And we've got dealers in 41 states sending us those applications, new car
franchise. That's every day?
What is every day? What's the question?
You're getting how many of those every day?
We're getting applications from those 6,000. We could get those applications from 6,000 dealers daily.
Wow, it's a lot of things to go through. Now, is it a computer system that just analyzes those and approves or doesn't approve, or people are actually looking at these?
So we've got a decision engine that essentially decisions 80% of them in that 30 or 40 seconds based on everything that we know about the client: income, loan to value, the vehicle, their credit performance. And then another 20% or so still need to go to an underwriter to say, this one's on the fringe, what can we do with it?
Okay, yeah, well, that makes sense. Do you find that there has been more applications as of late? Like, is there more applications now than there was before COVID?
I guess what I'd say, Derek, is, you know, as COVID hit, that whole period of March and then the summer of 2020, there was a lot of reduction in applications because people just didn't know what to do. They weren't sure about their jobs.
Right.
They maybe weren't even going to them. So we did see a decline in application volume, and used car values plummeted. And then they started climbing as new car supply started to wane. And now used car values started skyrocketing. So people started thinking, I can get a lot for my trade, so I'm going to run to the dealer, even though they were short on inventory. So we saw this, we started to see, even though employment and economic uncertainty was out there, people started going back to the dealerships. Now, I wouldn't say that it was pre-COVID levels and in terms of application levels, but we were just talking yesterday, our application count is almost back to normal. It's sporadic, obviously, with seasonality of the business, but it's also sporadic as reports come out about unemployment or inflation, and people are looking at all these things. So it's been up and down with gas prices and all those sorts of things. But we're about back to pre-COVID in terms of application levels.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, that's good. I mean, when COVID hit, in every business, people were like, well, what the hell's going on? You know, what's going to happen? No one knew. And then the automotive industry hit this sort of boom because the demand was so high and the supply was low. And plus the used car market went just, you know, bonkers and still is doing great. So dealerships have been doing awesome. So I was just curious about what the levels of applications for buyers was pre and post, but it's getting back to pre-COVID levels, which you said is still a good thing, which is good. So let me ask, what does the financing for cars look like right now? Are percentages still high? Are they going down? I mean, what's doing with that?
Even in terms of interest rates for auto loans?
Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. So, they're still low by historical standards, but about every average borrower is probably paying 3 or 4% more in interest rate, 3 or 4% higher interest rate than they would have when COVID hit.
Right.
So across the entire FICO spectrum, everybody's paying more for rates, but they're still, you know, they're still very low in terms of history. But that doesn't mean it's still not painful to people when they may have bought a car, and it's no different than a mortgage. You know, somebody might have locked in at 3% and now you go to buy the same home and it's now 7.5%. And so you have to put a lot more money down to get the same payment or stretch the term.
Right. Yeah. Because I mean, I feel like it's even like you just said in the housing market too, it's crazy right now. I think it's coming down a little bit, but I know automotive was similar.
Yes.
It's very interesting. Where is it going now? Like, because I know if you go to a dealership and you want to buy a car, there's like really no incentives anymore because they don't really need to have them because, you know, the supply and the demand. So are interest rates, because people need to rely on the interest rate. So are they going to get lower, or are they just going to kind of stay where they're at? What do you think?
Well, I guess what I'd say is I'm probably not the right guy to predict the future of rates because I think everybody's having trouble doing it.
Yeah. I just figured I'd ask.
Well, no. And we have a whole team of experts that work in our economics, work on our economics team and are constantly trying to, you know, inform all of us on what our costs might be going forward. So I'll just give you a generic answer as it relates to, you know, if they stay stable, let's say, for example, what's still happening is if they stay where they are, people are struggling with affordability because now that same car is much more costly. Mm-hmm. People are trying to figure out whether to hold on to their, you know, their 12.5-year-old car or not. And when I look at the other factors, so let's say interest rates constant, you know, if we're to leave them constant or if they were to stay constant.
Right.
The other dilemma is really for the manufacturers. We, you know, at one point during the pandemic, we were at a third of our floor plan line of credit utilization. So what that means is all of our dealers and we're a microcosm of all the dealers in the country had a third of the inventory they did pre-COVID. Now that's starting to work its way back up, but it's still nowhere near what it used to be. So now you've got sort of back in the Great Recession, there was a supply side problem, right? Chrysler and General Motors filed bankruptcy in May of 2009. And so there was a supply side problem, UAW contracts and all that. Well, we got completely flipped to now it's a supply side problem where the manufacturers can't make cars fast enough.
So is that picking up?
It is picking up, but again, we're still in that place where day's supply on the ground is still significantly lower than pre-COVID.
Yeah.
So as long as there's still a demand, or I should say, as long as there's still a new car supply issue, and there is, it's better, but there still is, used car values will stay high, which will still make, even if rates were to come down, let's say, used car values are still expensive by you know, historical standards.
Yeah.
And so there's still like all those things in play in terms of day supply. If manufacturers start pushing more cars out, then of course, if they push too many out and demand starts to wane a little bit because of the economy, then what we'll see is incentives coming back like we had seen. You know, leasing is only 20% of the business now. It peaked at 30% of the business. Incentives, you know, used to be really common, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 rebates. Right now, incentives are only 3% of the average transaction price. Right. And before the pandemic, they were 11%.
Wow. So that's huge. That's big difference.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty crazy because and I know there's still, obviously it's getting better, you know, with the supply of cars. But it's, I don't know if we're ever going to get back to, and I've said this to dealerships and dealership owners and CEOs, I don't think the dealers need to have a lot that's like so full of so many cars. I think there could be a balance between what it used to be and what it is now. It's still a little low, but like find a medium balance. I feel like you don't have to have all those cars there on the lot. That's just my opinion. I you know, but just the way people are buying cars now, whether it's online, whatever.
Yeah, I think that's a question. And I think you're right. And in one of your other podcasts, I know you debated it with another person and they were on the other side. And I'd say I'm sort of on the other side. I sort of feel like history might repeat itself. There's still a ton of dealers out there that believe, and a lot of general managers and everybody that believes, like, I need a pretty full shelf to sell from, because there's still a lot of impulse buyers. And if you tell them they need...
Yeah, I don't know if it's right or wrong. I'm just curious.
Well, no, I think there's still a lot of impulse buyers that don't want to wait 4, 5, 6 weeks or more. And so what happens sometimes is by the time that car comes in, they cancel the order because they've gone somewhere else or changed their mind. And then there's still also the, my car's been totaled or it needs a major repair and I don't want to do it. I'd rather buy a new car. So to your point, there is a balance between stocking too much and making too much and then having to incent them for the manufacturer to get rid of them and having a crazy amount on the ground. I think it's still going to sort of repeat itself. I don't know that we'll get back to the same levels of day supply, but I think when the manufacturers were saying sort of, we're just going to make just in time and everybody's going to have to wait for their car and order it, I don't believe that can actually happen because other manufacturers will step out, put more on the ground, and everyone will then start looking around going, I better get back to that or I'm going to lose sales.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what the right or wrong answer is, but you know what you're explaining does make a lot of sense. Do you find that certain brands have better deals when it comes to interest rates for a car? And I'm just saying random companies here, but say does Ford have better deals than Volkswagen because maybe they are getting more vehicles and can offer more so they can give lower rates? Again, just using Ford and VW as an example.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's nobody dramatically out there with bigger rebates or lower, you know, 0.9, 1.9. In fact, even the people that are doing the 0.9s and the 1.9s, and all the dealers would tell you this, they're oftentimes for 36 or 48 months. And with all these things in play, people generally can't afford to finance at the term to get the rate that's being advertised. So
So they end up getting a bigger, higher rate.
Yeah, they end up needing to get, you know, sort of more traditional financing than subvented financing to get the term that they need to make the payment what they want. So, you know, again, those gigantic incentives, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 a unit, they're not there right now. Right now, we're really seeing is the APRs.
Yeah. Do you think those incentives will come back?
Well, I think, given that they're 3% of the car's price now and they used to be 11, they will start moderating back upward. And we'll see, you know, as manufacturers want to move some cars, they'll probably do a little more enhancing the residuals to get a lease payment down. That's another way to, you know, to get loan payments down is to lease. Not everybody can live with all the mileage limitations and so forth, but you know, we'll probably, you know, mileage a couple of months, or excuse me, leasing a couple of months ago was 19% of the business. Now it's 21. Peak was 30. So we're not there yet. But I think everything will start to slide up a little bit.
Yeah, it's going back up for sure. And slowly but surely we'll get back to what it used to be in a sense, but with a lot of new modifications, I guess you could say, because a lot has been learned from what happened during COVID, you know, and also mergers and acquisitions were very high and still is, but like everything, it's not always, that's not all going to stay that way or last and be this lucrative. So you have to prepare and plan and all that stuff. So, okay. So not to totally switch it up real quick, but I wanted to ask you about this. So you're a second degree black belt in Taekwondo. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah. Well, first off, that's awesome. So congrats on that. But do you find the discipline you've learned being a second degree black belt in Taekwondo has helped in your professional life at all? Is there anywhere those two worlds collide, maybe in the discipline aspect?
That's right. You know, no one's ever asked me that. So,
I know it's a weird question, but I just thought about it.
I guess perhaps because I started when I was really young doing it and then I finished it later. So I guess if I did it in the last 5 years, it certainly didn't influence much, but I did it, you know, I started it probably when I was 13 and then I finished it later in life because college got in the way and all those things. So yeah, I guess it did. It probably, I know even for my kids, I'm probably, they're either like me or I'm like them. The busier I am, the more disciplined you have to be to organize the day. And so like, I can tell when their soccer schedules were full, they did better in school because they knew they had to get it done. And when they had too much time, they put everything off. And so I guess it probably did create some discipline that I didn't know where it came from.
Yeah. Like I said, I figured I'd ask because I think it's cool and interesting and an interesting thing to ask people about what they do in their life professionally versus what they do as hobbies and recreational things they love and how they kind of meld together. So I figured I'd ask and I figured there's a way those two things connected for you and there's no wrong answer. And I thought yours was great. Are your kids into cars? Are they car people? Are they in the industry? How old are they? So
my boys are 2 years out of college and 1 year out of college essentially, and my daughter is a sophomore in college. And the ironic part is, yes, they all are car people, and my wife wasn't, but now is since we got married 27 years ago. But the funny thing is, my daughter is probably the biggest car person of the family. She'll come home and go, "Dad, I saw this, or I saw that, or I want this." And so she's probably the one that I converse with the most about it.
Even what does she drive?
She has a BMW X2.
Oh, nice little solid sporty SUV. Definitely a nice car for a sophomore in college, better than what I was driving. Now, do you help them, like when they're buying a car, obviously, since you know the industry and you know, finance, do you help them out with, obviously you help them out when they're buying a car, your kids, your
wife? Yes, absolutely. Yeah, family. Absolutely. They don't go anywhere without me about cars.
As they should. I mean, you've been in it forever. You're a great resource, you know, and no dealerships can pull one over on you. You know, I think most dealerships aren't really like that anymore. That's kind of an old cliche where, like, you know, the shiesty dealership guy, you may get more of those at a used dealership, but at manufacturer dealerships, you know, they're all pretty straightforward and legit, I think.
Oh, I think absolutely. I mean, we have every one of our dealerships is professionally run.
Definitely.
You know,
yeah.
Policy and procedure manuals. They're always thinking about the customer. You know, they're always thinking about client satisfaction. They're always thinking about doing the right thing. So it is, the dealers are, you know, very straightforward, honest, transparent. Yeah. I mean, I think some customers try to paint them to be something different than they are. And that's usually quite unfair with what really happened.
I think so too. I definitely agree. You know, last question before we get going, is there any solid piece of advice you'd give to dealership owners, you know, CEOs or folks that work at dealerships right now that you think is very important, you know, coming from what you do, talking to a dealership? Like, here's what I think would be a strong piece of advice.
I guess there's probably two or three. I mean, one of the things that we worry about, or I worry about in my daily, you ask me about my day. One of the things I worry about during the day is, and with having both sides of the business, right? You look at floor plan utilization and values and so forth. And dealers today are trying to be careful on how much money they put on the trade-in. Because the used car values have skyrocketed so much that they're not going to drop like a rock, but they're going to decline. So you got to be careful with the trades because I may not care on the indirect side what a dealer paid for a trade, right? But on the floor plan side, mm-hmm. I'm hoping, right, that all the the GMs and all the dealer owners are watching inventory and liquidating it quickly before what I just paid for it becomes a smaller number next month. So that's on the floor plan side based on used car values. Now, then you'd go to indirect and those used car values. Now I've got to be careful on how much I'm lending against them. So we've got those kinds of things with it as it relates to interest rates for the floor plan lines and interest rates for the used car borrowers. The other thing I'd say is franchise values, multiples are really high. Acquisitions are very strong. And I think dealers are being real cautious about, you know, sort of not overspending to buy a store because you can't buy it on the multiples of the last couple of years of net income. You got to buy it on what it probably did before that. So that's another thing. So franchise values and being careful on, they're all being careful on how much they spend to buy something. And then probably the last thing I'd say is also the manufacturers want all these buildings and want essential brand elements and all these things. They want every Toyota store to look alike. So the other thing that dealers are being careful about is, you know, the size and the price they spend on a new building. You know, sometimes it's a $40, $30, $20 million project, and maybe if $5 million less was spent, that might have been a better idea. And so, you know, there's a lot of dialogue going on all the time when we're looking at helping a dealer finance their building, and sort of being an advisory role of, you know, does this make economic sense? What do your sales have to be? What is the, how many units does the manufacturer have to give you for you to afford this building? And should it be bigger, smaller, or what?
Yeah. Wow. I mean, that's a lot of good advice right there on all points you made, but I never really thought about that last one. And that's a big one right there. You know, just think about the building you're putting the dealership in. Are you spending too much for it? Like, spend less and, you know, it'd be more conducive to your bottom line. That's some interesting stuff there. Jeff Turley, I appreciate you coming on the show. Anything else you'd like to say before we get going?
No, I don't think so, Derek. Just thanks for the opportunity to talk with you and have a great day.
Yeah, thanks. And it was great talking to you as well. And good luck to your Pittsburgh Steelers.
All right. Well, thank you. Good luck to your Giants. And honestly, if you ever need anything, whether it's a podcast or just want to talk about the business, give me a yell.
You got it. Will do. Thanks, Jeff. That was Jeff Turley, the president and head of auto lending at PNC and also a second degree black belt in Taekwondo. So don't mess with Jeff, as they say. Actually, I have no clue if they say that. I literally just made that up. Anyway, for more information, head over to PNC.com. That will do it for this episode of DNT. Make sure you follow us on social media at Dealer News Today. I am your host, Derek D. DerekD.com for all my stuff. Appreciate you listening, everybody. So until next time, this is Dealer News Today.